Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Porter was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
know about
pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who's now a national television star, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, big guy?
I'm well. How you doing, man?
Good. I missed you. It's been days. It's been almost a week.
We've been traveling a ton. We've been on the road. But I understand that you've been on television.
Yeah.
C-SPAN.
Yeah. It was. I got to say, it was nice. I didn't use that whole green room thing, which drives me crazy.
Yeah.
So it was pleasant.
No makeup.
You know, it was clean. It was in and out. None of that stuff where you're sitting around for 10, 15 minutes.
Did Jolene, clean. You know, put any, powder on your face? Or
No. She was kind of, we had to tape this Saturday morning. And they do it live or whatever. Mm-hmm. She was still fast asleep.
Yeah, how nice.
She
how
was
nice.
Like, don't even bother me.
So did you get any funny phone calls?
Yeah, a couple of wackadoodles, but what the heck. I showed my aplomb. Oh, well, but I did learn something just before we went on the air.
What's that?
I learned it from you, in fact.
Yes.
We've got a mysterious, mystery agent blogger in the education space now.
This is Edgy Won't Get. She's been blogging now for, what, like 9 months, a year, 3 years? I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure I've heard of it or read it or something, but I didn't know that it was a mystery person.
Yeah, she's anonymous. And I've heard it said that she's likely a PhD student, perhaps at teacher's college. But it's not quite known. She is anonymous, though she did pretty funny posts last week on those of us here at Fordham. Somehow you escaped her attention.
What did she say about you?
She was musing about whether that we would make for a good boy band.
Oh, you showed me the picture. I like
the
picture.
You should see the picture. Yeah.
Hey, but no, this is fun. This is like a Lost episode or something. Yeah. It's like the mystery of who it is, and it could be this person.
It could be.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I wonder who it is. I understand that Diane Ravitch knows who it is, but she's not telling. The question is, could it be Diane Ravitch?
Could it?
Well, probably not. I mean, if you look at the boy band picture, it's just unlikely. Yeah, it seems rather unlikely.
Diane with an RA, perhaps.
But Edgy Won't Get, one of the names, well, let's see, she thought we could be called Rage Against the Rothstein or Checker in the Fins. My personal favorite, of course, was Millie Petrilli.
Mm.
It's good. And it's been pointed out around the office, though, that Millie Petrilli was a two-man act. That maybe you and me, Rick, we could go on the road.
We could take that, babe. Take our show national.
Oh, when one of them killed himself?
They really were a two-man act when they were acting.
Okay.
When they were acting in the fact that they didn't actually sing.
They're just
the
Millie. That... Okay, let's get going. We've got a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have Jeff Kooner's Education Outrage of the Week and Liam's Education News of the Weird. Christina, let's get started.
Topic 1. Palm Beach County School District, like many nationwide, has a problem with poor teacher attendance. Says its labor relations director, quote, "We have terrible attendance, especially on Fridays," unquote. What can districts do about it?
Shocking. Rick, did you have poor attendance on Fridays back in the day?
You know, I got to say, I think it was kind of the Kip phenomenon. When I was teaching, I was still young. I was energetic. I actually looked forward to going in. Mm-hmm. So, no, the couple of days I missed, I was actually always kind of pained by because it was so much fun.
So you were just hungover on Fridays?
But I was. This was when I was in Louisiana, so that was more or less a default state of being. So,
all right. So, what do we do about this? It really does seem like this is almost an epidemic in many districts. Teachers taking a ton of time off.
I mean, it's the norm, right? We've got 180, 185 day teaching year. With that, the norm is 10 prescribed sick days. Teachers receive little or no incentive not to use them. The expectation is they will use them. So teachers use all these days. I mean, what it suggests is, one, that we've created a mindset in the teaching profession when we have not inculcated teachers with a sense of professionalism. And that's partly because of the way they're paid. That's partly because of the way they're hired. It's partly because of the way we organize schools. And the other part is that there's no material or concrete incentives on teachers to be more responsible about these kinds of things.
So are there some places where they can get extra pay if they don't take these sick days?
I think, you know, certainly there's state systems where for accrued unused sick leave, mm-hmm. That when teachers retire, they can get that prorated. So if, you know, up to a limited number of days. So if you're allowed to accrue 60 or 80 days, mm-hmm. you can actually walk away with a third or 40% of your salary when you leave, which can be as much as $30,000 or $40,000 in a place like Westchester or Montgomery County.
So that sounds like a reasonable thing to do, though.
Those are certainly kind of healthy incentives. Part of the problem, though, is you cap there.
Yeah.
And but this is the thing. What we need to do is it's both cultural and it's also got to be about concrete incentives in which teachers who use sick days, there's got to be real pressure on them not to do so.
Okay.
Next one. Ohio is moving to incorporate a progress over time measure into its accountability system. As a result, Cincinnati is likely to go from an academic watch rating to an effective rating because it's made more than 1 year of growth on average for its students. It will thus have the same rating as several high-performing suburban systems, even though its students lag far behind. Does this demonstrate the genius of a value-added approach?
No, it does not, Christina. But thank you for asking. Look, I got a real problem with this. Cincinnati, I think it's a fine system. It's making a lot of progress. It's certainly been at the epicenter of many school reform efforts in recent years. But still, you look at achievement data, and most of its students are way, 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 way behind where they need to be. So let's say you've got kids in eighth grade who are reading at a fourth grade level. If at the end of eighth grade they're reading at a fifth grade level, or a fifth grade in one day level, is that enough? I don't think that's enough. I think this is sending all kinds of the wrong signals to the community.
I got to take issue with you, Mike. I mean, right, two issues here. Is that enough? No, I agree with you on there. On the other hand, the question is, does that mean that the Cincinnati school system is ineffective? The answer is, if they're moving kids at least a year's worth, if kids are learning at least a year's worth of accomplishment, then a school system is doing a reasonable job in the course of that year.
That's ridiculous, Rick. I mean, because what? Then that means that students are going to graduate reading at a seventh or eighth grade level, and you're going to say, oh, the school district did its job. You know, the kids came through there, and they didn't lose ground. They didn't gain any ground either.
You know, but
they can't actually go and get a job or get into college or, you know, contribute to society. Oh, no, the school district's effective. They did all they needed.
This is,
what you're saying?
The question is, if you're dealing with doctors, who you got a doctor in Boston who's dealing with a whole bunch of kids whose parents have normal health, birth weight kids come to term, and you've got another doctor that you've assigned to Bangalore or somewhere in Africa. Half his kids are coming to him HIV infected. Kids are coming low birth weight. I mean, are we saying that the doctor is incompetent in Africa or Bangalore if they don't have the same infant mortality numbers as the doctor in Boston?
No, I'm not saying the same. I'm not saying that the Cincinnati Public Schools has to achieve the same level of outcomes as an affluent suburban district. But I am saying that they need to get their students to some reasonable level of proficiency by the time they graduate, just like that doctor in Africa or Bangalore it should be expected that, you know, kids who can be saved are saved.
But the question is, right, so the question is, what can you reasonably expect? And it strikes me that we can reasonably expect school districts in the course of a conventional academic year to move kids about a year forward. If they're doing that, they're doing their job.
And I think if a school district has a kid for 12 years, they ought to be able to get them to some reasonable level of proficiency by the 12th grade, even if they're starting out way behind.
Last one. In California, a school principal changed the official racial identity of four students from black to white in order to escape the sanctions of No Child Left Behind. The students either had left a blank question about their race or reported mixed race. By having fewer than 100 black students, the school didn't have to be held accountable for their poor performance. Is this the most outrageous divvying up by race you've ever heard about?
Rick, our chickens are coming home to roost. I tell you, this is I know you and Liam have been very skeptical about this whole disaggregation by race feature, No Child Left Behind. I think you're maybe the only two education analysts in the country who don't think this is a great feature of the law. My point is, look, even I have to admit that, you know, if we're so obsessively race-based in this system, eventually this is what's going to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, all these guys are doing is responding to incentives. I mean, if kids are mixed race, how do we decide that they should be identified as black rather than white anyway? Are we back to the one drop of blood rule?
Right.
I mean, if you've got mixed race kids, it strikes me as perfectly reasonable for a district to say we're going to identify them as white.
But listen to what this principal, okay, he sees what's happened. He's got 100 kids classified as African American. They missed the targets for AYP. This would have sent the school in need of improvement. Because the Department of Education signed off on this crazy system in California where they have an, quote, N size of 100, meaning that if you have fewer than 100 kids of any particular group, they don't count as a part of the accountability system. He said, huh, if I can just move a couple of these kids out of this group, it'll be okay. He then had his teachers go spend their time to track down their parents to ask for permission to change their racial classification. I mean, this is just great use of school resources.
Well, the other thing here is there's been this whole N size issue has come up in terms of the new guidance from the Department of Education. And people have acted as if there's something horrible about having N sizes of 50 or 75 or 100. And the reality is that the problem with really small N sizes is you get massively unstable results. If schools are generally doing a pretty solid job, going back to the last question, I hate to see them flagged because a really small sample of 25 or 30 kids out of a school population of several hundred doesn't happen to make over the bar.
Well, but we know that they're using these margins of error, the confidence intervals, that it's keeping that from happening. So I tell you,
Well,
no, I mean, most states have a huge confidence interval around their N size. So if they have a small N size, you get around this problem of instability. The bottom line is you can have an awful lot of kids fail the test and still not be declared in need of improvement. But that's enough. That's all we have time for today. You know who else is in need of improvement?
Tell me, baby.
Jeff Cooner. Jeff, I'm just kidding about that. But so this thing in California was already outrageous. So you're going to have to outrageous.
Well, and you're outraged about Cincinnati.
You're
outraged about Palm Beach County teachers.
I am fired up today, Rick.
You are. You are one angry man.
I think I've just been traveling too much. I've spent all this time on airplanes. It's just making me
mad. You know
what
they say? They say short guys are often angry at the world.
So
which is why it's ironic that Jeff's angry, because he's tall.
Are you saying I have a Napoleon complex?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But Jeff, what's outrageous in the education industry this week?
Mike, there's just so much outrageous stuff going on. Honestly, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
I think you said that on the show before already.
So,
let me
shoot one of the fish here. Ian Shapiro, a good reporter with the Washington Post. I don't think he's their best reporter, frankly, but he's a good reporter.
Jeff, you're a communications director, and you're going to just come on the air and offend the very journalists that we're trying to get.
I just want to be brutally honest, Mike. I'm always trying to be brutally honest. Oh, sorry, and it's not Ian, it's Eon. He's very touchy about his first name. So Ian Shapiro.
Eon or Ian?
Ian, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's Ion, Ian. It's definitely not Ian, that's for sure.
Well, I'm glad he'll never be writing about it.
Very touchy about his first name.
You just don't know what it is.
But Mr. Shapiro, let's put it that way, has a very nice piece called When Young Teachers Go Wild on the Web. And it's obviously outrageous, and it's about this proliferation of teachers who are putting profiles on social networking sites like YouTube, MyFace.
YouTube is not...
MyFace. Sorry, MySpace.
Cooner,
sorry.
Cooner, you're not even 40. I mean, you got no excuse for that.
Sorry,
you're not
Facebook.
40?
Sorry, I'm 38.
Are you
I'm
really?
39. No. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm 38.
And YouTube is not a social networking site.
No, okay, whatever. Well, people put up videos or whatever on YouTube. They do.
I thought you were in charge of our web strategy.
Well, Facebook, MySpace, you know, that's where a lot of the young people are hanging out there. Apparently, it's like a big social networking thing going on. What's happening is a lot of these teachers...
Apparently, you have a MySpace page.
Yeah.
We looked at it when we were interviewing you to see whether or not, and it gave us some reservations, I got to admit.
Well, that was done by my previous company. I had nothing to do. I mean, I just gave them my information, but they put it up. So anyway, so apparently this stuff is very big. The problem, however, is you have a lot of these teachers who aren't just putting up, you know, basic information about who they are, their background, their resume. They're putting up a lot of racy, sexy, outrageous things up there. Now, let me just give you a taste, just a taste of what Mr. Shapiro documents in his excellent piece. So, all right, so here's one Montgomery County special education teacher, kindergarten teacher. She posts a satirical shampoo commercial with her and a half-naked man in a shower having an orgasm. Okay, here's another one. A D.C. public school teacher. This is what she says on her page, quote unquote, teaching in the D.C. public school system. Lesson number one, don't smoke crack while pregnant. And they think like this stuff is funny. Then you start going down.
It's a little funny.
But hold on. But here's the one that gets me. No, here's the one that gets me. There is an Erin Jane Webster, all right, a long-term substitute teacher. I don't know what that means exactly, but anyway. She has some regular info. It's all fine. Her high school, where she got her degree, etc. But check this baby out. she has a couple of bumper stickers up there. One of them says, quote, "You're a retard, but I love you." Here's the problem. Just a little tinsy-wincy problem. She teaches children with learning disabilities.
Right.
Emotional and learning disabilities. So when she's confronted with this by people at her school saying, well, don't you think this could be offensive to the students, calling them retards? She's like, I never really thought of that. Now, and this is her response. Check this out. She goes, this is what she says. My best friend, she always calls me that because I say ditzy things. Take that stuff off your website. People don't think it's professional. That's just my advice to Erin Jane Webster. But Mike, in all seriousness, the outrage here is that you have a lot of teachers who obviously don't understand that they do have a public role. They perform a public a public duty and obligation to their students, and they do, and their schools do have a public mission, and they should comport themselves to certain basic decent standards in terms of their public conduct. And frankly, I think some of these teachers need to be fired.
There it is.
And really, and Erin Jane Webster, I think, you know what? I don't think long-term substitute teaching is for her.
Okay, Jeff Gooner with our education outrage of the week. Wow, for a second there, Rick, I thought nobody was going to get fired, but glad to know that, that was not the case. Isn't this a little ironic coming from a man who does have a MySpace page that I've got to tell you almost lost him a job at the Fordham Foundation?
Really?
And yet he's giving other people career advice.
What was it about the page that worried you?
Well, it was just rather intense. The AC/DC blaring, the... That's AC/DC. Yeah, that's... Yeah, we really weren't sure when we heard this. We really weren't sure. We thought we weren't sure that approach was going to work so well with the media.
And has it?
Yeah, the jury's still out. All right. Well, it's that time that we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Tiffany Shepard believes she was fired from her job as a biology teacher at Port St. Lucie High School in Florida because she works part-time as a bikini maid aboard Smokin'em Charter's fishing tours. She says that by making money for going fishing in a bikini, she has done nothing wrong, but district officials say Shepard was doing something wrong. It just didn't have anything to do with bikinis. They say Shepard missed more than 30 days of school this year and received two written reprimands for the absences. Quote, "She just doesn't come to work," unquote, said Susan Renew, the district's assistant superintendent of human resources. Quote, "We did not know about her second job until after she received her notice of non-renewal." Shepard disputed those statements, however, saying she missed only 20 days this year, and she doesn't believe her absences are the reason she was fired either, because she knows of another teacher at Port St. Lucie High who missed three quarters of the year for a stomach ulcer, but was reappointed next year. The case remains unresolved, and that's education news of the weird.
Wow. I mean, Rick, it really all comes back to this teacher absences issue.
And that was weird. That was weird. That was a good one, Lynn.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Thanks.
And it meshed nicely with the Palm Beach County. They're both Florida-based.
I like
both
that. Themed. Did you have a part-time job when you were teaching?
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah.
But that's because I was making $18,000, so what the heck?
That was good pay back then?
No, it was lousy pay. But I'm just being silly.
Yeah. All right.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, man.
You feel it?
I'm feeling it.
It's almost like a whole different show from the first half, isn't it?
You've mellowed it out now, haven't you?
Well, now that I realize I'm kind of the grandpappy figure, I feel I gotta play the role.
I mean, in some ways, Rick, you're closer to Checker's age than really the rest of ours. Well, not really, but I mean, only if you consider 40 like a major dividing line.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's true. Me and Checker do have that simpatico bond.
All right. Well, Mr. Senior Spokesman, until next week, who are you?
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.